bill we're going to take up is Senate Bill 91. We have Senator Kelly, Senator Green, Senator Parnell, Senator Taylor, and myself. We have a CS for Senate Bill 91. If staff would explain the differences in the CS so we can adopt it.
You want me to do it or you want me to do it?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Brett Huber, staff to you and the Resources Committee. CS for Senate Bill 91 Resources, version I. Basically, it's a bill the committee had before them with some language that's been added to at the suggestion and recommendation of the Department of Public Safety. It's the same language that was added to a previous bill the committee dealt with, Senate Bill 68. That additional language appears on page 1, beginning with line 14, through the end of that subsection, and then subsection C. What it does is offers the Department of Public Safety the opportunity to respond in the unforeseen absence of available federal of assistance from available federal source to avert a present and substantial risk of physical harm to a person. It also exempts the provisions of this bill from some of the current federal state relationships found in the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, the Pacific Halibut Act, the Marine Mammal Protection Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Magnuson-Stevens Fishery Act, and the Pacific Salmon Treaty. And I believe there's a representative from the Department of Public Safety online that can speak to the bill or answer any questions.
Okay, this is the language that was adopted with their concurrence in Senate Bill 68?
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Other questions?
The department here?
Yeah. Do we have someone from the, either, are they online or here? Do we have someone online from the Department of Public Safety?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Frank Ballmer. I'm Lieutenant Howard Carver with the Department of Public Safety.
Have you seen the work done?
As the committee substitute, as I understand it, being read there, the specific concerns that we have, enforcement concerns that the Department of Public Safety have, are alleviated with the substitute. And I'd like to pass on the commissioner's appreciation for the hard work that this committee, specifically Senator Taylor and your office, have done to address our law enforcement concerns. We feel that with those issues addressed, that we'd be able to do adequately complete our mission, and the officers and public safety is covered. I can't speak to issues brought up by other state agencies, but our concerns are alleviated, the department's concerns are alleviated, and our opposition to that specific bill is stated.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead. Excuse me.
Howard, this is Jerry Mackey. Have you seen the work draft to the CS that's that we now have in front of us?
Through the chair, Senator Mackey, I have not. I did speak with Brett, and it's my understanding that the language is similar to that in Senate Bill 58 that was passed out of the committee. And if it's worded the same as Senate Bill 68, then our concerns, we feel like our concerns are met as far as we'll still be able to do our job and still adequately protect officers and the public.
The language is identical, Senator Mack.
Necessary, the unforeseen absence of available assistance. Registers. Okay. Thank you.
Can we have a motion to adopt the CS?
So moved.
Is there objection to the adoption of CS?
No.
Without objection, the CS is adopted as the vehicle before us.
Mr. Chairman, is anyone else going to testify on 91?
We had the public hearing on 91, so I don't think so.
I'd like to move Senate Bill 91 for the committee's individual recommendations.
Is there objection to the motion to move out Senate Bill 91? Without objection, Senate Bill 91 is moved from committee with individual recommendations.
Mr. Chairman, I should have said it before. I appreciate the sponsor's willingness to address my concerns which obviously were the same as the departments on that issue. I feel much more comfortable. It doesn't hurt the intent of the legislation, but certainly protects the public safety question that was involved.
The next bill we'll take up is Senate Bill 90, which is also by Senator Taylor, and we also have a committee substitute. We'll be at ease briefly.
It's tough. And, we established it. In the press release,
we'll come back to
I
order.
Think he is a unique subspecies.
We'll come back to order. We're on Senate Bill 90, and the CS is on its way. Committee staff will explain what the CS does, which is exactly what we just seen in the prior bill. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, you have a blank CS before you that's version K. The CS that we're waiting for from drafting now makes two changes. In subsection D on page 2 of version K, it deletes the words regardless of cost found on line 16. It then adds an additional section that once again exempts the provisions of this bill from those current federal state cooperative programs.
Okay, does it do it with the same? Let's see, where's the.
Mr. Chairman, it does it in the same format as was done in Senate Bill 91 with an additional section that specifically exempts those from the provisions of the bill.
Right here.
Okay, that is the section that deals with enforcement of specific federal acts, but does it include also B and A with regard to assistance?
The assistance section actually is in version K, D now. The only change to that assistance language is the dropping of the words regardless of cost.
Okay, I got you. So all it does is it adds what was section C on page 2 of 91?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We could, in lieu of having the CS in front of us, we could adopt that as amendment to this CS and go ahead and move the bill. Senator Mackey?
Yeah, I would move the adoption of that change.
Okay, let's adopt version K and then amend it.
Move to adopt version K as a work draft.
Okay, the motion is to adopt the K version as the markup vehicle for a CS. Are there objections? Without objections, that is the vehicle. Senator Mackey?
Mr. Chairman, I move the changes as outlined by committee staff in subsection D, regardless of cost, is removed from that section.
Okay, we have a motion to delete regardless of cost on line 16, page 2. And insert the section from Senate Bill 91 that refers to the federal acts exempted from the effect of the legislation. Are there objections to that amendment? Without objection, that amendment is adopted, at which point this CS is ready to be moved.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Mackey.
Before we do that, I have. I think a question or possibly some concern with the legislation. On page 2, after line 5, where it says essentially that the state of Alaska is the only entity under which the federal government can transfer any type of management to, which is it the intent of this legislation to effectively remove any possibility for co-management agreements with anyone other than the state of Alaska? Et cetera, et cetera.
Senator Taylor.
Yes.
Senator Taylor, don't you have a legal opinion that says that that's the constitutional standard?
And that's part of the problem, is that we do have a constitutional standard that establishes who shall manage fish and game in the state of Alaska, and that's a constitutional grant of authority that we cannot delegate away from the Constitution.
Okay, is there any instances now under which the state or the federal government contract for any management of fish and game in the state currently?
You'd have to ask the department. I don't know. I'm not aware of it.
I am just trying to remember from memory of the opinion. I think there are instances where ministerial functions are contracted. There are not instances where substantive decision-making functions are contracted. I think that's the difference. And Senator Kelly, do you have a copy of that opinion? That would be the best explanation. Do we have it anywhere here? I know I've seen an opinion that deals with that difference, and that's what this whole thing hinges on, I think.
The real question is one of discretion. Who will have the discretionary authority to make decisions about actual management policies?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's something that we can delegate without an amendment of the Constitution.
Okay, my other question, Mr. Chairman, is do we have the ability to tell the federal government that, I mean, let's say they take over management of subsistence in October, short of us passing a constitutional amendment to avoid that, the federal government, you know, obviously through federal law, will have the right to manage those resources. Can we, by state statute, tell them or deny them the ability to have a management agreement with anyone that they choose?
Senator Taylor?
I think we can, to the extent that it impacts state land and state waters. The question about whether or not we as a state still have our statehood rights and do have the management authority over our fish and game as all other states do, that's yet to be litigated. But as far as state lands, yes.
Right. Well, if we had that kind of ability, then we would be able to, by statute, tell them that they can't come in and take over management then, right?
I think we have that ability. It's just there's been a refusal to litigate it on the part of the administration.
Well, until that's adjudicated right now, the federal law allows for management by the federal government by an act of Congress if we're unable to resolve it. And therefore, I mean, they manage federal lands and the fish and game resources on those lands. Isn't that correct?
I think the federal law says that they manage subsistence harvest
only,
not the whole resource. But then the whole debate is to how they pull that thread into the whole resource.
Okay, then what would happen should the federal government take over management of subsistence fish and game? And what happens if they chose to enter into a management agreement, say in one particular region? This is just hypothetical, but if they, in one particular region of the state, that perhaps they contracted with a regional nonprofit organization or something like that, for the management of those resources, and they assert that they have those authorities under federal law to do so. What kind of a conflict then, or how does this statute, if it becomes law, play out against that authority? Is that something then that would have to be litigated, or I mean, how does that work? Because I think we're telling the federal government they can't do something that they believe by an act of Congress they have the right to do.
They believe from that act of Congress, according at least to the enforcement personnel they have up here right now attempting to implement it, they can not only enforce that on their lands, but they can also extend off of their lands and into state, what they even recognize as state lands and state waters, to enforce those federal restrictions off of their lands in an extraterritorial fashion. I do believe that sometime in the future, someone is going to have to stand up and litigate this question on behalf of the state of Alaska. Unfortunately, we don't have anyone willing to do so at this time. But how will it be resolved? I firmly believe, yes, eventually the entire question will have to be resolved in court.
So, in a sense, we're passing a statute here that quite possibly doesn't have any authority whatsoever.
No,
unless you have to back up. Federal law doesn't give management authority. A court case gave management authority following federal law that said, if not this, then that. And so they got from a court case. But, you know, the bottom line is going to be how the court rules the supremacy clause of the federal system against the state and to what extent it applies it. I assume that, you know, not being a lawyer, you two guys can tell me whether I'm totally off base, but that's the way I read it.
So in other words, if the federal government comes in and takes over, which I believe they're going to do, and they enter into a management agreement with someone other than the state of Alaska, then what happens? Then the state would have to, what's the enforcement mechanism for this statute then? Does it require a lawsuit and then have a state judge rule on a federal law, or how does that work?
Well, I don't think that is how it would play out. I think what really happens is they enter into a contract and then they attempt to exercise some of those contractual rights on state lands or waters, and then they are in our state court. Yes.
No, I'm only talking about federal lands.
Well, if we have someone with the courage to defend this entire issue, this will provide one more opportunity for that to be resolved. Yeah. Other than that, can we as legislators, the real bottom line, and we as legislators sit idly by and watch our Constitution be violated as concerns the management of fish and game on our own state lands and state waters? And I don't think we can. And we cannot currently delegate that authority out to some other group or organization, as you've mentioned, nor can our Department of Fish and Game.
No, I'd agree with you on the state land part of it, but this also includes federal lands.
Absolutely.
So how does...
Statehood compact, those federal lands and all the game on them and all the fish in those waters belong to the state of Alaska. They do not belong to the federal government.
Isn't it probable that if it's on federal land, it's clearly federal land, the case will end up in the federal courts?
Absolutely.
If it's clearly on state land, there's a pretty good hope that we can keep it in the state courts.
Okay, so that's the question, is whether or not they're asserting jurisdiction over state lands or federal lands. Probably in a federal, if it's federal land management, this probably isn't going to mean a whole lot in a federal court, right? I mean, you're probably going to give me that one, right, Robin?
Our Constitution doesn't mean anything in a federal court. In fact, it's never even been submitted as a document indicating that it did mean anything in a federal court.
So
we
for this,
anybody to do that.
But my point is, for this to have any chance of having any impact on it, they would have to first try to assert management over state lands, at which time our enforcement people would be in a position, or administration or somebody would be in a position of having to challenge based on a state statute in a state court, and that's a different scenario than it would be on federal land.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. I just wanted to understand how that works.
There's two very distinct different paths that this thing can take, and I think your questions are excellent. They give us a very good portrayal of which directions we may end up having to head. One would be in state court, and that would be in state waters and state lands. The other, we're going to have to resolve it in a federal court because that's the appropriate jurisdiction over those lands.
So is it safe to come to the conclusion then that if they take over management on federal lands, this probably isn't going to have a whole lot of basis, but if it did go to a state court, then at least the state of Alaska would be in a position to defend the state land and management portions of our Constitution?
Yep. I wouldn't give that away, but that's a probable outcome. Is that a better way to say it?
I feel a little better about that.
Do we have a motion?
We haven't received the CS, but we have amended the old one.
Yep.
So I will move the bill with individual recommendations as amended by the Resources Committee.
Are there objections? Without objection, the bill's out of committee with individual recommendations. That brings us to the key element of today's hearing, which is Senate Joint Resolution Number 20. We do have a CS for that.
Well, I would move
complete with the latest information.
I would move the CS be first the final clarity of the work document.
We have a motion to adopt 1LS0834/D. 4999 CS for Senate Joint Resolution 20. Are there objections? Without objections, that is the working draft before us. Senator Taylor, or your staff.
I move the bill from committee with individual recommendation.
I still move. I object.
I mean, I just want to spare the commentary. I'll give it to you, Robin, if it means you don't have to talk about it.
Senator Taylor. Well,
first off, at the risk of losing a vote, it came to my attention a couple days ago that a beaver had been attempting to establish himself in the tidal basin area of the National Mall in Washington, D.C., and that he had, according to newspaper reports, downed 4 cherry trees and 5 white cedar trees, and that the Park Service personnel were immediately packing off the food that he thought he'd put on the ground and stealing that, and then chopping down the stumps so no one would trip over them, and that they were trying through various devices to trap him and remove him from the area. I believe that this animal has been made extinct in that area by the development of that portion of Washington, D.C., of the district, at least, into a...
Almost extinct.
Well, they were extinct for some time in that area. Today, they are no longer extinct because this beaver, and he apparently, according to newspaper articles received today, he now has a friend, so there are at least 2 beaver in the area that are attempting to establish a colony there. And we even have reports that National Park Service personnel have been running around for some period of time picking up twigs and branches and logs and other things so as to prevent the beaver from building a home. They keep referring to it as a nest in Washington, D.C. I've never heard of a beaver nest, but...
They usually build dams.
And they are talking about, and they're very concerned, in fact, about the potential that the beavers may very well dam up part of the tidal basin. I've actually seen the tidal basin. I think this might be an improvement. I do think that because we've had extensive experience, at least here in the West, with people who have been thrown in federal jail because they... went out and plowed their own land, privately owned land, and they plowed it, and only to find out that there was a resident colony of kangaroo rats there, and that the rats were much more important than the plowing of the field, and so those people were placed in jail because they had violated an order from the federal government telling them not to disturb the critical habitat of the kangaroo rat. We know that critical habitat concerns with the spotted owl have pretty well decimated the timber industry of at least 6 western states. We have concerns in the Tongass National Forest alone of 2 different species of both southeast archipelago wolf and the southeast goshawk, which have been alleged to be subspecies, though never so proven. But even without the proof, the Forest Service locked up about a major portion, about half, in fact, of the existing forest base was taken away. So as a consequence, we know that and have had firsthand experience with people actually being punished for harassing species or subspecies that may be on the endangered species list. And I would assert that if the beaver is not on the endangered species list, as far as the District of Columbia, he certainly should be, because he's been extinct there for some time. Furthermore, the area occupied by a species like this that is on the endangered species list, that area becomes critical habitat. And there are very strict federal guidelines on how critical habitat shall be protected. And one of those restrictions is that most human activity must be stopped in that area. Any major construction projects need to be terminated immediately. In fact, failure to do so could significantly jeopardize the beaver's opportunity to reestablish themselves on what actually is their native land. You see, the beaver was there for eons before any human, ever appeared in that area. And I believe that, Well, I believe even the first presidents of this country, I believe George Washington, probably all the way up through Lincoln, could walk down across the mall and actually probably see beavers there in the tidal basin. In fact, I really believe that with good science, we should be able to establish whether or not this is a subspecies. And in light of some of the dramatic scientific breakthroughs we've seen in evolution, where bacteria can evolve within a period now of a couple years and become drug resistant. And I figure that this beaver is probably the latest adaptation of a subspecies called the tidal basin beaver. And that's primarily because he has learned to live and survive, evolved to survive, I should say, in an area that has some of the highest pollution and corruption I've ever seen. In fact, it's probably at almost toxic levels back there. And he's surviving. So he could very well be a subspecies, and that would be very exciting. But he definitely needs to be saved and protected and preserved.
And not imprisoned.
And not imprisoned. I mean, if I pick up an eagle feather off the beach in front of my house, I can be subjected to a $3,000 fine. If I disturb an eagle nest, I can be thrown in jail for up to 3 years, felony. And yet here we have, I believe, accurate reports of park personnel that are harassing an endangered species, removing its food supply, and attempting to capture it in a clam-like device. I don't know what that means exactly, but it doesn't sound very comfortable to me. So with those thoughts in mind, I have brought forward this this resolution for your consideration. I think that there's probably a typo or two, because we have done this rather hurriedly. And we probably need on page 3 to amend after the words tidal basin. We need to insert the word beaver before the parenthetical, or the semicolon, before the semicolon.
What page now?
On page 3.
Line 4,
yes.
Tidal basin beaver.
And then semicolon.
Yeah. Okay. And then on the same page, but at line 8, it looks as though the word adaptations was not spelled right, and that probably needs to be corrected. I talked to Senator Miller this morning, and he told me that as far as he was concerned, he believed that it took a village to raise a beaver. And I'm sure Washington, D.C. would appreciate and understand that.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kelly.
I'm a little concerned that we get this off as quickly as possible, because is the Vice President aware of this? Because I'm afraid if they don't remove him from the area, one of these beavers might mistake him for a piece of wood and eat him.
Oh. Mm.
How could they do that when he invented the Internet? Gee. Anyhow, I would recommend that... I would move the amendments as suggested to those two lines.
Okay. Have we adopted the CS yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, we have a couple other types of
places.
Well, I kind of read it quickly here. So.
Go ahead and tell us, Jack, where that needs to go. Okay. Page 2, line 5, the Potomac Tidal Basin. No. Okay. Tidal Basin Beaver looks okay.
Ward Cleaver.
Oh, they're calling these beaver evasive and wily tree
Ward
predators?
What'd you say?
Ward Cleaver.
It was the tree predator title that encouraged me to recommend to the folks in Washington, D.C. that they use the American Academy of Sciences, because they've been studying our wolf predation problem up here for over 5 years now at a significant expense. They don't know anything about wolves, but they've been studying it for us, and they could probably be very helpful in getting some good science
for
the people in D.C.
Call on the committee.
I would point out, Senator Taylor, that these, you have said they had been extinct, and they haven't been extinct. They haven't been evident in this activity, but they certainly haven't been extinct. This unique subspecies has been there from time immemorial.
That's probably
needs
true.
To be protected. They're threatened, at least endangered, probably, but definitely not extinct. We have a motion to adopt the amendments. Are there objections to the technical amendments to the CS? Okay, the technical amendments are then adopted, and the CS is before us. Where does this go from here?
Right back to the rules.
Direct to Rules Committee for action as soon as possible so that we hopefully can protect these animals before something further happens to them.
We definitely need to have public testimony, though, if there's anyone here.
There may be
oh, is there anyone here that wishes to testify this legislation?
Rod Arno left. We're losing our crowd.
I just am amazed. I'm sure there are people in Washington who would like to testify on this legislation, but we're not hooked to them by teleconference, so we'll have
in
to.
In fact, Mr.
Go
Chairman, I understand that the residents, the people who live in the area close or in close proximity to where this beaver habitat is, they are letting their word out. They're very upset about what the Park Service has been doing, and they're very protective of those beaver, and they want to do what they can to support. So we're really just helping the folks who live in that area, too.
They might.
If we have to remove the residents from that area, or possibly the congressman, do we have to get them in live traps, or can we use leg hold traps?
I think Don would probably favor leg holds. That's what he's presented to Congress before.
How about snare it? Like
snaring, that'd be good, yes. Well, actually, we're just concerned about the beaver right now and making certain. I was surprised that SEAC wasn't here to testify in support of this, because I know how strongly they also believe, as I do, in the protection of these species.
Mm-hmm. Senator Taylor, do you have a motion?
I move the bill from committee, or resolution from committee, as amended with individual recommendations.
Are there objections? Without objection, the resolution moves from committee with individual recommendations. Senator Taylor, I would have tried to do pass.
Ward Cleaver's resolution.
I want to thank the chairman and the committee members for their patience and their assistance in promptly dispatching this resolution.
Has this beaver been named?
He hasn't really been named, although we've been kind of calling him Bucky.
Mike
Miller was concerned as to what we would call his partner.
We're adjourned.
Because he's now got a partner, you know.